Ladies and gentlemen, it's Thursday. We got a huge college football week coming up. Thursday on Football Scoop Podcast, we like to talk about the upcoming slate. You will notice it's only three of us today. I've got Zach Barnett, Doug Samuels, college football experts themselves. We don't have John Bryce. John is on special assignment. He will share that assignment, as commissioners do, shortly. I'm excited to hear about his experience. With that said, gentlemen, it's a great slate of college football. Appreciate you guys being on today. Let's talk some big games. I just want to hear thoughts and excitement level. Texas Tech is at Utah. Zach, it's an early start. Give me some thoughts on that one.
So usually when we do the whole irresistible force versus immovable object thing, the immovable object is not the Texas Tech run defense. In fact, it's never been the ever. Texas Tech run defense in the history of that program. Nope. But going into this game, they are the number one rush defense per carry among teams that have played at least three games. They're giving up 1.5 yards per carry. The most yards in an individual game they've given up so far is 62. Utah is averaging 290 rushing yards per game. Tech has given up 151 rushing yards on the entire season. Now, Tech's played Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Kent State, and Oregon State. That bears mentioning. Now they got to go on the road into the mountains to play a Utah team that, I mean, John said that Kyle Whittingham has said this offensive line, he knows he's got two NFL tackles, best offensive line he's had in years. They imported the principles from a New Mexico running game that was second in the country last year in rushing, obviously with coordinator Jason Beck, quarterback Devin Dampier. Utah's obviously at home. I like the Utes to win this game, but I think it's going to be a hell of a fight to get there.
I think it's got to be a close fight, too, with all the investment Texas Tech has made in support staff, roster, transfer portal, all that. I think Devin Dampier is the secret sauce to this game. He's played near perfect as a quarterback. He's able to run the ball and be really effective on the ground. But I agree with Zach. I think Utah wins this one, and I think Texas Tech has got to keep it close to keep their Big 12 bid for the college football playoff alive.
Before we go on to the next game, I do want everybody to understand Zach Barnett is running away from a couple of people in the picks, not from everybody, but from a couple of people. So I'd pay special attention to what Zach says. With that said, Doug, I'm going to ask you, Michigan's at Nebraska. I don't know that anybody really knows what these two teams are yet. Early on, I had said that I thought Nebraska, even with the early season wins, was going to wind up under their total. And I was assuming Michigan was going to get them in this one. I think the line's real close. What do you see on this one?
I mean, I like Nebraska's experience on the roster. I think Bryce Underwood is going to be a very, very, very good quarterback. But I think to expect him to do that as a freshman is probably asking too much. And really, Michigan just doesn't seem to have the playmakers offensively that they have in years past. I think that puts a lot of pressure on Bryce Underwood. And Nebraska's coming into its own a little bit. Dylan Raiola's playing solid. Matt Rhule teams are always going to run the ball, and we're in the critical year three of the Matt Rhule era, where he has consistently shown outside of the Carolina Panthers, at the college level, that he's going to turn things around. So I like Nebraska in the game. That would be a second loss for Michigan that kind of sends people in Ann Arbor reeling a little bit, but it's I like Nebraska in that game for sure.
Zach, give me a counter to that.
Well, the counter would be Raiola's numbers are night and day from where he was last season. He's hitting 10% more of his passes. He's up 2 yards per attempt. His touchdown interception ratio last year was almost 1-1. This year so far, he hasn't thrown a pick. He's 8-0. But you go game by game, he was spectacular against Akron and Houston Christian. Against Cincinnati, he was largely the same dude we expected. He threw the ball 42 times to get to 243 yards. Not efficient at all. In fact, below his numbers from last season. This is going to be the best defense he's faced so far. I thought Bryce Underwood, when he was at Oklahoma, had more to offer than Sharon Moore asked of him in that game. Not to say they were going to win the game, but I thought that they played to play that close and not play to win. Sharon Moore's not coaching, or is he? He's out, right? Okay, that's what I thought. So you'd expect they probably played even more conservative without their head coach. Although Sharon Moore, the reason he's Michigan's head coach is because he was so aggressive. I remember at Penn State how aggressive he was going for fourth downs, and at Ohio State, that's why he earned that job to replace Jim Harbaugh. So I think if Michigan goes in there not to play it close, but to actually plays to win the game, I think they've got a great shot to do that.
It's a very good point. Yeah, they got to be a little bit more aggressive. I also think Michigan's defense is going to give real more than what he's seen, what he wants. I think this thing's a slug 'em out battle. I think Michigan finds a way at the end, but I don't want to put real American dollars on that one. Up in Oxford, Tulane's up there. John Summerall has a very good football team. They've found a way to win a couple of tough games, Duke and South Alabama. Ole Miss has all the pieces to run away from them. Defense hadn't been great. Does Tulane have the magic to find another win? I feel like the Rebels get this one again in a good game, but I think the Rebels just have too many horses on offense.
Is Austin Simmons back for this game? Do you have any idea?
I don't know the answer, but I really don't know that it matters. I was really impressed with the other quarterback the other night, especially the way he came back from injury. And that dude can move as well. So I don't know that it matters. I think both quarterbacks are very good. So we'll see. Yeah.
Do we think it was pure rat poison by Lane Kiffin in predicting that John Summerall would get an SEC job?
No, I don't think so. I think that's Lane just appropriately saying that this guy's a great football coach. And Lane, I don't think Lane's ever worked with John. John was at Ole Miss, I think, right before Lane got there.
With Matt Lane.
And I don't think they know each other all that well. I think they've met each other. But I think Lane has seen this dude. I mean, what he did at Troy, what he did with Ole Miss's defense, with Kentucky's defense at Troy, you know, Tulane, obviously. I think, you know, Lane's just recognizing that.
What Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin call rat poison, the kids nowadays call that glazing them up. And I think Lane was just glazing old Summerall up.
I think it was both. I mean, there's not a person out there that's not impressed by John Summerall and what he's done. So I mean, he's as SEC as Waffle House. So of course he's going to be a head coach in time. So I think it was a little bit of column A, mostly column B. But as for the game, I think Ole Miss runs away from him. I think it might take 2.5, three plus quarters.
Agreed.
I think there's 60 at least total points scored. I have no idea what the total is, but I bet you it gets up there. I bet both teams get to at least 28, but Ole Miss in time runs away.
61.5 is the over-under, so nice sure. Job, Vegas, Zach.
I feel the exact same way. I think Ole Miss just finds a couple of late touchdowns when they need them. They just got some dudes. Auburn is at Oklahoma. A sneaky, important game for both programs. Any thoughts on that one? Zach, how about you?
Yeah, I have a lot. I don't think there's any way. I think the Jackson Arnold departure to Auburn, obviously Oklahoma was not interested in bringing him back after last season. I also don't think Arnold was interested in going back. Like, I think this was a true grass is greener on the other side for both sides. So I think if this isn't going to happen, but if Auburn goes in there and wins 42-0, I don't think any Oklahoma fan's thinking, oh man, I wish we kept Jackson Arnold. Like, it was a departure that needed to happen. But it would be embarrassing for Oklahoma to allow the quarterback that you discarded to go into your house and beat you. And the vibes are extremely high at Oklahoma, as I wrote Monday. But this is a conference game, and your non-conference season show that you have a chance to make the playoff and compete for a conference championship. And then to start 0-1, it'd be embarrassing for Oklahoma. You know, I don't use that word lightly, but it would be embarrassing for them to lose this game. And I think Arnold's success, I think to Hugh Freeze's credit, he's used our Jackson Arnold in the best way, the way that suits his talents the best. Like, they're not asking him to drop back and throw 30 times a game. They're getting him on the run. 15 is probably the number of passes. If it gets above 20 for Jackson Arnold, then that's probably a really bad sign for Auburn in this game.
Auburn, after this one, I think has A&M, Georgia, Missouri. It's like,
And they're at A&M as well.
Yeah, they need to find a couple of wins in there. You know, for Auburn to be keep building, they need to find a couple of wins. And this feels like one that, you know, Hugh might find a way. I think I pick Oklahoma to win the game outright, but it would be fun to see Hugh get that team right again.
Agreed. And then from a vibes perspective, for if you're Oklahoma, you basically have three off weeks after that. You don't play at all next week. Then you get Kent State, and then you're in Dallas to play Red River. If you win, it's a three-week party and getting ready to go to Dallas and take down your rivals. If you lose, you got to live in this moment for 3 weeks until you get a chance to go out and redeem yourself.
Well said. All right. Florida's at Miami. I believe Florida goes in there on a mission. I also believe Miami is just better, and Miami finds a way to win the game, probably by a touchdown or more.
I picked Florida, and I hate the pick, but I'm going to stay with it, as weird as that sounds, just because on a down-to-down basis, Florida outplayed South Florida. Florida outplayed LSU. If not for self-inflicted mistakes, they win the game. So it's going to look stupid if Miami wins, but I choose to believe Florida's too good to go out like this.
I hear you. I just think Miami's a little better than people are even giving them credit for, even though they're number four in the country. Doug, what you got?
Yeah, I think Miami is one of those handful of teams that is like in the tiers for college football in the playoff. Like, Miami's on that first tier with, you know, maybe five other teams. The way they've played through early in the season, Carson Beck has been better than advertised, I think. And if this game comes down to quarterback play, you want Carson Beck and not DJ Lagway coming off a five-pick deal. So, I'm taking Miami just because I think they are in that first tier of teams that could compete for a national title.
Here's a conspiracy to throw. So this is Florida's fourth game. If this doesn't go well for Florida, you know there's going to be people in Lagway's ear saying, hey, you need a red shirt. You're not right. You try to gut it out for your team, but it's just you're not ready to play. Your shoulder's bothering you, whatever. And claim injury and then sit out the rest of the season to protect his future.
I hear you, but then you hit the transfer portal with you decide to try the greener pastures with five touchdowns and six interceptions heading into this game, and you're not exactly a high profile dude. The way that he's been utilized at Florida, he came out of high school as one of the top dual threat guys in the country, and I think he has zero or one rushing touchdown in his entire career as a Florida Gator. So he has not been the same player that he was, and while he showed promise last year, like that this year, they're reverting back to, I don't know if they're relying on him to throw the ball too much or what the deal is at Florida, but he's not the same dual threat guy that he was coming out of high school.
I hear you, Doug, and his career touchdown to interception ratio is 17-15. Having said that, if DJ Lagway hits the portal, the line form to the left. Yeah, I mean, the demand for quarterbacks is always going to outstrip the supply, especially five-star number one recruits.
I totally agree. The normal human in me goes, no way, Zach. And the cynic goes, gosh, you know what? That's not insane. It, you know, if it's all about short-term bag, that's not insane. All right. Goodness. Bright sun. Illinois is at Indiana, which could wind up being an unbelievably great football game. Doug, give me some thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, Big Ten country. If we were talking about this game 5 years ago, Illinois and Indiana being super excited about this one, we would have thought people would have thought we're crazy. But you know, Kurt Cignetti teams don't beat themselves. That's kind of been their MO. They don't commit dumb penalties. They play solid football on in all three phases. And Brett Bielema's teams are always super physical. So I like the Hoosiers. I think they're ranked lower, but I think they're favored by Vegas in this game by like 6 points or something like that. So Vegas always knows something we don't know. And I think the Kurt Cignetti has used the you don't play anyone national narrative that helped them get in the playoffs last year. This is an opportunity for them to knock off a 10-win team and shut people up. And I know that they've definitely found a way to use that in the building as some jet fuel for this matchup. Interesting nugget. Bob Bostad worked for Brett Bielema at Wisconsin, is now the run game coordinator at Indiana. So there's an interesting history there. I give the tip of the cap to the Hoosiers.
Isn't it funny that Kurt Cignetti's 14-2 as Indiana's head coach, and the rebuttal is, well, who have you beaten in those 14 that's impressed anybody? And right now the answer is, well, we beat a Michigan team by 5 points that other than when they weren't playing Ohio State, wasn't that great. So if they win this game, Kurt Cignetti would be 15-2. And the answer to that question of who have you beaten is, well, we beat Illinois. Like, it's a good team. Everyone respects what Illinois has done, and it'd be a top 10 win. And Illinois doesn't face that question because they beat a South Carolina team that everyone loved in the bowl game last year. So I just find it ironic that Indiana, for all they've accomplished, if they win this, they could go win this game by 30, and their crowning achievement of this era so far is a win over another historic Big Ten cellar dweller.
But heading into the season was a dark horse for the college football playoff.
Right.
Everyone loved. So.
Right. But yeah. So no, you're exactly right. My point is if you just change everything about Illinois and just put Wisconsin helmets on them, the narrative would be different, but the facts wouldn't be.
I'm on Iowa on that one. All right, Zach, you're neck of the woods. SMU, TCU, talk to me.
So it's, this is the last scheduled SMU-TCU game. It's 104th of all time. And this is, for most of this game's history, it's been a complete afterthought. Played before empty stands among teams that were fighting to stay out of the cellar in the Southwest Conference. The ironic thing is it's getting a lot of attention now simply because it's going away. But it's also hotter. This rivalry is hotter than it's been since the 30s and 40s. You have teams that genuinely do not like each other. You have the fact that Sonny Dykes was SMU's head coach, is now at TCU. SMU beat them last year. It's 3-2 SMU in the last five games. But Sonny Dykes said, like, and he's not wrong, like, if this game is going to be continued playing as scheduled, no one in the national media would be talking about it to the extent that they are. It's the fact that it's right. Going away is why it's gotten the attention that it has. But it sucks that this game is going away because these two fan bases, the schools, do not like each other. And for once, they're evenly matched. I've been on record that TCU is underrated, undervalued as a team. They've only played two games so far. They smacked the dog out of North Carolina. And after that game, we were all talking about how bad North Carolina was. So I think TCU wins this game. I think they win it by double digits, 10 to 14 points. And Sonny Dykes goes to the podium after the game and says, see, I told you so.
I like TCU as well. It'll be a good football game. Fun one. All right. Last week I mentioned that Arkansas always gets weird with Ole Miss and usually finds a way at the end. They almost did it. Ole Miss got the turnover at the end that kind of sealed the game. So Arkansas is playing at Memphis this weekend. I think that's a really good football game as well. Any thoughts on that one, gentlemen?
I mean, I think it's a sneaky good game. It's an opportunity for Ryan Silverfield and Memphis to put a SEC pelt on their wall and claim the top group of five school right now. I think Arkansas realizes how close they were last week to beating a pretty good Ole Miss team with a quarterback that stepped up and played out of his mind in Trinidad Chambliss. But I would take the Razorbacks in this one just based on the talent they have on the roster and being a little miffed at how close they got last week and let it slip by. I don't think Memphis has the horses. I think they're getting closer. They are a top group of five program, but I don't think they're ready to compete with the, you know, bottom-ish tier of the SEC.
Yeah, I think everyone when pointed at Arkansas schedule is like, oh, don't sleep on that Memphis game. That Memphis game is gonna be a trap game. You better bring it when you go play at Memphis. It's in between Ole Miss and Notre Dame. They're going to sleep on it. I think that has been played up that there's no way Arkansas is overlooking this game now. And certainly when they get to a Liberty Bowl that's going to be full of Tiger fans and full of Razorback fans, they should have plenty of energy. Their biggest obstacle in this game is a Memphis team. It's pretty darn good. They went to Troy and beat Troy far more impressively than Clemson did. At Clemson's place.
Yep. Agreed. I'm on the Tigers to find a sneaky way to win that game. I think it's going to be a good one. And that would not be great for Sam Pittman if they do that. Memphis is pretty – I mean, it's right across the river from Arkansas, and there's a lot of stuff going on there. Friday night, got two games. Tulsa's at Oklahoma State. Iowa's at Rutgers. I don't know that I would cancel my Friday night plans to watch either if I had big Friday night plans, which – you know, who knows? Actually, I do, but that's okay. Any thoughts on either of those gentlemen?
Yeah, I thought on Tulsa, Oklahoma State, and you have two head coaches at the opposite end of the spectrum of their careers. And Trey Lamb is a great opportunity to get a lot of attention. And Oklahoma State, if they lose this game, it would just continue that program circling the drain.
Yeah, Trey Lamb, I think earlier this week, called Mike Gundy one of the most underrated head coaches in college football history. I think put him in the same breath as Bill Snyder. He's walking into that matchup with a ton of respect for Gundy. But man, if the Cowboys lose that one, it is not good in Stillwater.
Before last week, I think we all thought South Carolina and Missouri was going to be a battle. Sellers dinged up. I don't know. Any quick thoughts on that one, gentlemen?
Well, one team that's a legit SEC championship contender,
as I read on footballscoop.com.
And it's the team in Como, not Columbia, South Carolina. So I'm going to look pretty foolish if Missouri turns around and loses South Carolina. So I'm on the black and gold. I'm on the Tigers here.
All right, let me ask you guys a question. If you were betting actual American Benjamins, dollar bills, y'all, I'm going to ask you to pick one of these underdogs, big underdogs. Syracuse is like getting like 17 at Clemson. Maryland is getting something like 9 or 10 at Wisconsin. You like either dog?
Yeah, I can say this because the person that signs my checks is on this call, so I can confidently say this. To see some of the plays that Syracuse receivers have made over the past probably 2 or 3 weeks, I would take the orange if I had to pick one of those underdogs. I think Maryland's defense continues to lag way behind where they are offensively, and I know for a fact that if Syracuse finds a way to win that game, maybe Fran Brown keeps Clemson out there to do gassers after that game.
I love it. Zach, either one of those excite you?
I feel comfortable taking both dogs to cover, but to win outright, I'd go Maryland. I'm just joining the chorus of not really impressed by anything I see out of Wisconsin right now. And the fact that they're coming off of a banking by Alabama, they're probably not the freshest they've been physically or emotionally, and maybe they sleep through this one a little bit, and Maryland gets a lead that they can nurse to the end.
I'm with you, Zach. You always tend to have an an unusual game in the back of your head that you just want to share something about? You got something come to mind this weekend?
Oh, man. I don't have one immediately off the top of my head.
That's so, okay. Doug, anything on the schedule that you feel is notable?
I'm kind of scrolling through things. I think we've hit a lot of the big ones. I don't have anything that really jumps out at me. Bottom cellar dweller. I am a big Joe Moorhead fan. I think he's a great offensive coordinator that probably got run out too soon at Mississippi State. Went to Oregon. Now he's at Akron, and they have struggled to score points mightily. Akron Duquesne. I would put that one on my radar, that if I had that channel, ESPN Plus, I don't. Probably won't be watching that one Saturday.
Here's one. Such human for bringing that up. Akron Duquesne. I mean, that's...
I'm a fan of who I'm a fan of.
I feel comfortable saying this because I believe I'm on the record of going over on TCU win total. That's going to hit. Under on Notre Dame, that's already hit. So... BYU at East Carolina. BYU's getting 6.5. That seems crazy to me. I think East Carolina can win this game outright.
I would agree with you. Yep. Good. All right. Let me transition you guys. We're 25 minutes in. I want to go short, maybe 5 minutes in this. NCAA kind of ratified rule change. Transfer portal is going to happen. They're going to go single portal window. It's going to be in January, early January. In connection with that, the recruiting windows have kind of changed. December basically is going to be dead. January is going to be contact. You can go recruit. Other than you get the portal early and then you get the AFCA conference convention. So that'll be dead, which they always do so the coaches can actually go to the convention. December being dead, personally, if I'm a football coach or a football coach's spouse or child, I'm fired up. If I'm a high school football player or his family, I'm fired up. To me, this is incredibly logical. You can have the holidays. You can celebrate Christmas. You can do whatever you want to do as a family, which I think is wonderful. You've already had your season. January, you can make some big decisions or in between. Any thoughts on any of this, gentlemen? And then I'll take you one step further and ask, how does that play into an athletic director who's considering a change? In the past couple of seasons, we've seen changes happen week 3, week 4, week 5, week 6, in hopes that they can have a guy in place Thanksgiving such that he can sign a class, transfer portal, manage all that. Now, do you have more time to do that in an orderly fashion?
I think it helps. I don't think it's going to create a revolution or anything like that. So the early signing date is remaining that first Wednesday in December. I believe it's December 3rd this year. The December portal window was previously, I'm looking at an NCAA document right now, was previously set to be run from December 8th through the 27th. So you're pushing things back 4 weeks, a month, whatever. But we all know not these players, these agents, these coaches aren't waiting until midnight on January 2nd or 12:01 a.m. to start making their calls. They're going to know who's out there. And we also know you don't even technically have to wait. You can just unenroll somewhere, re-enroll somewhere else. So I do think it will help make things more orderly. The need to hire someone in October, as long as your house is in order, you know, we've seen UCLA and Virginia Tech already make changes because they felt like they had to. So you're still going to see that. But to get ahead of it, there's less to get ahead of now. I think probably the bigger change is getting rid of the April window. And that's a lot of time. I mean, yeah, I think it's great. But I could also see coaches being a little bit anxious about that because, for one, you could get through spring, and if you have an injury or you're not as deep as you thought you were in a certain position, you could go restock there. And now you're going to see a lot of people be like, all right, this is one my – you might see more people, more players that don't necessarily want to leave but feel like they need to test their market value. So you're going to see, I think, more people jump in January than they otherwise would have, just because it's their one shot to see what they're worth on the open market.
Or the flip side is they don't have an easy out, and they've got to double down with, you know, effort and that kind of stuff to crack the lineup, like have to persevere a little bit. And I think that's a great thing.
I think so. I think when January rolls around, you're going to, for most of these players are going to know where they stand. Like, hey, I was a third string. I didn't play. I need to get out of here. Or I was an all conference player in a group of five school. I know what this guy got. I know what that guy got. I need to get in the portal. So I think you're hopefully December's going to be better for everyone involved, all these families, but I bet you January is going to be worse. Whatever you gain in December, I think you're going to pay back and then some in January.
Yeah, but it's a 7-day window or 10-day window, whatever it is. Like you said, you can plan for it. You're coming off your season. You've probably already, you know, you're starting January workouts as necessary. You know, probably not started really, honestly. But you know where you stand and if you need to make a move. And, you know, Zach, you said more guys are going to be in the portal. Just about everybody's been in the portal already, even if they weren't looking to move. That way they could just gauge the market. So, gosh, I mean, to me, this is a great thing. And to Doug's point, as the football coach, buried deep inside of me, which really never has happened, but Doug is. Hey, strain, persevere, get better, challenge the two. Go move yourself up the depth chart. So I think this is all very good for football.
I agree. And I think I don't want to put a number on it because I don't know the true answer, but I would believe to bet over half of these guys, they may make some short-term money, but they do not improve their overall life situation now or 20 years from now by up and leaving.
The thing that I like the most about it is you don't have teams like in Arizona State that had an outstanding season. Now they're trying to prep for a playoff, you know, their playoff games with dudes hitting the portal and, hey, do we have to pay to keep you around just so we can practice? Like, you get rid of that. And I know that there's a no crying from the yacht type arguments, but I really like that for teams like Arizona State that had a great season but had to deal with some of that last December. We're able to put some of that to bed.
That's a great point, Doug. I mean, I think of the last two playoff runs, Texas dealt with it in 23, Penn State dealt with it last year, where their backup quarterback was like, hey, I know for a fact I can go be a starter somewhere else, and I got one shot at this thing. I have to up and leave my team right now, or this opportunity is going to go by. Now those guys can stay with their team. And, I mean, that could have been a horrible situation for Penn State or Texas if you're forced to play your third string because your second string guy has joined another team because the calendar forced him to. Nobody really wants that. So obviously that hopefully will be reduced and some team out there can avoid a nightmare scenario where they got to play a true freshman third string guy or a walk-on because their backup's like, well, this is my one shot to go be the starting quarterback at another Power Four school or whatever.
Zach, forgive my ignorance, but you have a portal that's open, say, till January 10th. Could a guy change and play in the playoffs?
No. You can only play for one school per season. I mean, I guess if you wanted to go be a scout team guy and wear a jersey on the sideline, I don't know that anybody would stop you, but you cannot play.
Okay.
But
if you had not played, could you? You
still can't. No.
You can't. Like, if you were on the roster, like September through December, but, you know, redshirted or whatever, you can't come in January and play in the playoffs for a playoff team.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, the Attorney General of West Virginia might decide that
disagree.
Violation of somebody's Sherman Trust rights and change that by the time this conversation hits the airwaves. But that's the reality right now.
That reminds me of, like, I think it was Nick Saban that had former Alabama players that didn't pan out in the NFL come back and they were like practicing with the team like 10, 12 years ago, something like that.
But
that's what brings back good memories for me.
Good stuff. Gentlemen, any closing thoughts? Zach, you got anything else? We out of here.
I'm going to make a controversial statement now. I enjoy college football, and I enjoy talking about it with you guys.
Highly controversial. Way to end the show. Great stuff. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. Let's have a great Friday night, Doug, Saturday for everybody else, and we'll be back Sunday morning with some reactions. Thanks, guys. We're out.